And the way they can do that is by forming republics and the republics forming federations. So it's a very different different approach.
I think that you could kind of see that the theorists have different goals, where you might say that Hobbes, his goal appears to be, at least on the surface, and would be to avoid the conditions for war, that he wants to avoid his society and other societies going down the path of war, or at least reducing the need for war, the need for conflict. Whereas Kant kind of wants to focus on the positives of human nature, kind of rather than the negative aspects of human nature. Kant wants to think about, well, our positive natural faculties, if we develop those faculties, they can lead to developments for the whole of human civilization. So, and I'm not sure if Hobbes had that idea. I do think, though, that the idea of, and I'll just pause for a moment here, the idea of creating or the necessity for a society with a rule of law whose members are free and equal citizens, I do think that that is coming in, at least in part, from Hobbes, that it's necessary for essentially to have a nation of laws rather than a nation of individuals who control what the law is at any given time. And this essentially is more or less the part in Europe where, or the period in Europe's history, especially since this is much after the British Civil War, where Parliament has become a stronger and stronger force in England, that the King of England or the King of Britain no longer has absolute power. His power is subservient to the will of Parliament, especially with regards to the act of declaring war. So that is a significant, I guess you could say, a significant piece to progress in Europe, is the idea that kings or the King of England no longer has the ability to declare war without the consent of Parliament. And so then the idea of that this will progress further, that a republic which is subservient to the wills of the people will never declare war when it's not in the public interest. But we could also argue that is potentially naive, because as we saw with World War II, it was necessary for the United States, which claims to be a republic, to be involved in World War II for the purpose of self-defense. Or so it does. I do think there you could raise some flaws with Kant's notions there.
But just for the sake of accuracy here, I don't want to oversimplify this, and I do want to point out that Hobbes was, although he argued for a social contract, he argued he presented justification for a political state. He certainly was not promoting a republic or a democracy or liberal democracy in any way, because his solution in the Leviathan. Yeah, his solution his remedy, his anecdote for the horrible state of nature in the Leviathan was for the people to appoint essentially a dictator and to trade away most of their power, much of their power, invested in the in the Leviathan, the dictator basically, and that would be a reasonable trade-off, according to Hobbes, because even though the people would be losing some of their freedom, they would be gaining order and security and safety. And I just wanted to clarify that so we didn't mislead our listeners into thinking that Hobbes was advocating for, a democratic republic, in the way that maybe that Kant was arguing for a republic. Hobbes didn't have that same goal in mind. So Hobbes and Kant were quite different in many ways, but they were similar in that they saw the need for organization, right? For structural organization in order to further the best interests of people. Organization between people, interpersonal.
I know that this is breaking our formatting a little bit, but I am going to delve a little bit into 19th century just because of, I think it will be irrelevant to our current discussion. So the 19th century writers on progress took up and elaborated the notion that conflict is an essential part of a progressive narrative. G.W.F. Hegel, 1770 to 1831, is an example of such a writer. Hegel does not give us a straightforward account of human progress. He puts a version of universal history as central in his metaphysics, from which a narrative of progress can be derived. According to Hegel, the world as a whole is in the process of development through conflict. Part of the world's development is the self-realization of its spiritual aspect, known as Geist or spirit. The freedom of spirit is achieved through the achievement of free social institutions and free human beings. As we look to human history to understand the realization of spirit, conversely, we recognize that the self-realization of spirit, an entity not reducible to humanity, is the true meaning of human history. So, to break Hegel's views down a little bit, and I'm not an expert on this, I know that the basics, he viewed that you had a thesis and an antithesis. You had, and this might not be the words exactly that he used. In other words, you had a majority kind of opinion, and then you had a minority opinion, and the conflict of those two opinions over time led to what he called development. And Marx took this idea and kind of refined it to the idea of a theory of economic progression towards the ideal as the ideal system of communism, which is a classless society. So that's where we're headed into the future, which is a very different idea of progress than we saw with Kant. But looking back on all of the shows we've done through this article on the ideas of progress, I think a very interesting question to stop and ask would be, based off of everything we've read so far, do we think that a theory of progress is useful for the development of human progress? That do we need a theory of progress for there to be progress? Is it useful to believe that it's obviously not that simple, because then we have to say, well, it's useful to have a theory of progress. Well, then the question is, which theory of progress should we have? But, you know, one question at a time. Is it useful to have a theory of progress? You could certainly say that it seems that way, that having economics seems to have, as a field, seems to have benefited us versus not having the theory of economics. Human civilizations advances in terms of rule of law, in terms of individual freedom, the idea of having free and equal citizens, and that being the definition of a citizen, that you have free and equal rights with every other citizen. Those ideals definitely, and their effect on the modern day where we live, where it essentially feels that we're living in much more of Kant's ideal than not living in Kant's ideal, where we have an organization like the United Nations, which seems to be a institution set up for the cooperation of nations, not republics, mind you, as Kant proposed, but it seems like we're moving towards Kant's idea. So was Kant's proposition of that idea integral to creating the world that we live in today, or the progress we see today.
Related question is, what is the scope of progress? When we talk about a theory of progress, whether one's required, and when we talk about progress itself, what is the domain? What is the scope? Are we just talking about economic progress? Are we talking about equality of people, the quality of life? Are we talking about medical progress? Are we talking about, and what about the whole new realm now, the whole new issue of environmental sustainability, the threats to the environment, say, from global warming? Don't we have to include environmental considerations in any concept of progress? Is there some goal that we need to be working for that we can measure our progress by virtue of how far we're coming along toward our goal of, let's say, living sustainably from a environmental perspective? So I think that's an issue too. What is the breadth, the width and breadth of any idea of progress? What are the domains of the human experience? What aspects of the world? We're just talking about economic, about spiritual, about physical, about environmental.
I think that's a difficult question, because it seems like if we took this to the extreme in terms of scope, we would have to be able to see society from essentially every different angle to be able to come up with a proper idea of a theory of progress. I'm reminded of something that I haven't done a lot of research on, but something that is kind of scandalous to talk about these days, which is the effective altruism movement. Have you heard at all about this, Michael? No? Okay. So this is a movement of people who essentially want to change the way that people think about charity and ethical duty. And they want to essentially move that. It's somewhat more complicated, but there's a book by Tony Ord, which we might cover a little bit more in future, especially since we've been talking about progress, that's called The Precipice. And essentially the idea is, Tony Ord is a philosopher, and he breaks down what he believes are the greatest threats to humanity in the present day, and what we can do to make progress on each of these individual issues. So that's, I think, one vision of defining progress, which kind of falls in line with what you were saying. He does speak to the environmental issues and some of the social issues as well, and also the ideas of income inequality and that as a global problem. I do think, from my perspective, I've kind of been approaching this with the idea from the field of computer science, from the talk that I did on the alignment problem, where essentially, not the work that I did on the alignment problem, the work that Brian Christian, the author of the book, The Alignment Problem, did, and that I reviewed. So he basically talked about, in computer science, a problem has been that we create a metric, an arbitrary metric, and then, believing that metric to be what will make our system good, we ride that into essentially what he says, like the void of no return. So some simple examples from the ideas of computer science is, he talked about, there was an app where you had to choose whether you could swipe left or right, and it seemed like all you were doing at the end of the day was swiping all of the time, and you weren't really accomplishing anything, you were just swiping all of the time. He's like, yes, that's because the people who designed this app designed it for this metric, that if our user is swiping, that means it's using they're using our app, and that means they're a good user, which means our app is good. So Brian Christian took a step back from that and was saying that, one of the things that we've learned is that if we focus only on the optimization of a metric that we think is good as a designer at the beginning, the metrics that we choose don't always optimize for what we think that we should be optimizing for, and instead they create unexpected phenomena. So rather than focusing on that, what he says is that sometimes what you can do instead is you can present users with a choice between two options and just simply ask a very vague question, like which one of these is better or do you think will lead to better outcomes? And so that's what I've kind of been thinking about with progress is rather than trying to approach it from many different perspectives, we'll just look at two different alternatives of the ideas of progress and think just, well, which one of these is better? And we've gone through some pre-enlightenment ideas of progress, some enlightenment ideas of progress, and we've tipped our toes into the ideas of 19th century progress. And it seems like some ideas are certainly better than others. I think Kant's ideas certainly provide a rich blueprint for how the world could be, but whether or not that blueprint is completely realistic and whether or not that is the ideal world that we should be striving for, I don't know if we're quite there yet. But does that confuse you or answer some of what your previous question was getting to, Michael?
I think it stands on its own, Aaron. I'm not sure that it either answers or in any way diminishes or contradicts my question. But I was thinking as you were talking that one way of looking at progress would be that it requires always taking into account new information and making decisions anew, right? So every point in time, every point in history is a new point. And we open our eyes and we say, with the information we have now and with what has happened before, we need to decide at this time what moving forward would be. There's sort of a structural idea of progress in that, which is the sense that progress is predefined and it's static, right? So the movement toward that static point is progress, but that's contradictory, right? So progress would be movement, but the goalpost to which we're moving is also dynamic, is also subject to change based on new information. For example, scientific discoveries, or for example, the development of the idea of universal human rights. So new discoveries that are made, new ways of thinking that people develop, that cultures develop, need to be employed in a reformulation of the goal at all times. So that's sort of a structural definition of progress, and that's actually value-free. It's structural. Because what I'm suggesting is that progress entails not just movement, but movement toward a goal which itself moves and is dynamic depending on the circumstances. It's sort of like agile software development, right? It's like it's a dynamic process, right? You know about agile software development.
Yes.
You need to change things as you discover, as you go along, you might need to change things. So that's a progressive way, a mode of being. So I'm suggesting that as a one way of looking at progress, which I still think is value free. It's simply speaking about the way it would be structured. Whatever that content is, that's the way the structure of progress would look, an agile system.
And that is quite similar, not quite the same, but the same type of idea that Brian Christian is trying to get at in his talk on what he calls the alignment problem, which is the problem between artificial intelligence and human values, is that these AI systems are often told to optimize for a metric that human beings have arbitrarily set for all circumstances, but that metric often leads the AI towards behavior that has devastating impacts that were not foreseen in the beginning. And so it's a question of reevaluating what those metrics should be and taking in new information. And sometimes that's as simple as kind of, as I was saying before, is just taking two different systems or two different things and showing them to a person saying, well, do you know which one of these is better, giving them vague instructions like that and just letting people choose. That can give you sometimes the new information you need to improve your system and to set a new goal.
If one accepts my criterion I just asserted, the idea of the agile dynamic process of moving toward a goal which itself may change, we can talk about originalists in the United States, the constitutional originalists who claim to believe in an original interpretation, originalist interpretation of the United States Constitution, such that the founding fathers laid out the Constitution, and that is what we should still adhere to. And that's one of the justifications given for gun rights, right? Because the founding fathers wrote, you know, the Constitution and the amendments of the Constitution in such a way that gun rights are protected, and we shouldn't change that. We should stick to that. But that's not a progressive view. That's not progress. That's keeping things the way they were, or even going back to the way things were. A progressive view might say, well, the founding fathers didn't know about, automatic weapons. They didn't know about nuclear weapons. They didn't know about the conditions that exist now in the country and in the world. I'm giving another example, right? Another contemporary example of static versus progress, conservatism versus progressivism. Even whether or not you agree with whether people should have gun rights or not, it's just sort of a structural comment that I'm making, that to be an originalist and to think that things should be frozen in time in 1776 or 1800 or whatever, that's sort of antithetical to the idea of progress, isn't it?
It's interesting because we were just talking about, you know, this idea that progress itself, and this is where we get to the philosophical part of the show, the very idea of progress itself needs to always take into account new information and needs to be willing to change. That means that we should be open to revisiting or changing any of the views that we currently hold, which feels absolutely ridiculous. To just think about it for a moment, the idea that, you know, we should give up having the ideal of living in a republic where we have free and equal citizens. You know, the idea that, okay, well, to have a better, more progressive society, we should give up the idea of equal citizenry. So there are some people who should just be treated differently than others because they should be. So, for instance, if, you know, people have X or B or have one specific physical trait, or the idea that, you know, you should treat some people better than others inequally, that feels like, you know, it doesn't feel like progress in any type of the term, but within certain contexts it can make some amount of sense. Like, that's why we have the ideas of social welfare, where the government is willing to support and care for the needs of citizens who are in essentially dire situations. And so we're willing to care for certain people more in some degree because some people in some situations need more care than some other individuals. Those, or you could talk for a moment about accessibility or disability needs, where we're creating structures for our societies that allow them to be more inclusive and more accessible to more people. And that is something that you could say, well, you know, that's a cost on all society in order to do that, and that's true. But if you make a society more accessible and everyone is able to freely participate in that, despite having some impairments that might otherwise allow them to participate, when you open the door to more people like that, yes, there's a cost to making a better system, or perceived, you know, in terms of like user adoption, in terms of creating a new system, and people will be resistant to changing that. But once you have created a better system where everyone can participate, that in itself is a better ideal. And you can see where that might originally go against the idea of Kant's idea of equality.
You alluded to, Aaron, a distinction between goals and strategies for attaining the goals. So we might say that we're committed to certain goals, and progress entails being open to new ways of achieving those goals and to changing our strategies when the facts warrant doing so, either because our prior strategies have failed or because we have new information now, maybe discovered by scientific methods that would cause us to change our strategies. So goals could be, equality, justice. Now we can, delve into ethics and say our goal should be to create a more just world with more happiness and people getting along better. But how we achieve those goals might change as we try and experiment, through trial and error, and new information arises. Now, of course, we can go down a philosophical rabbit hole here, and this is what I was fearing, right? We could say, well, shouldn't it also be that our goals are subject to progressive change? And then we could even say, well, shouldn't the commitment to progress itself be subject to change? Like, why are we even committed to progress? Might it be progressive to abandon our commitment to being progressive? And now we've gone a complete circle, and now we're getting into a familiar philosophical rabbit hole, which is to question the very foundation, almost in a circular way, of what we're doing, right? So you've got to stop someplace. There's got to be some way of stopping, of avoiding infinite regress here. We've got to say something is a goal that is that is sustainable, right? That has some longevity, that isn't always going to be changing. So I would offer that possibility to make a distinction between goals, which may remain quite constant over time, versus strategies, which may be subject to progressive revision.
An interesting point. You've been listening to The Canadian Philosophy Show. This has been Aaron Wang and Michael Robert Kaditz talking about the idea of progress and human society.
You can find archived recordings of The Canadian Philosophy Show on mixcloud.com/TheCanadianPhilosophyShow and tcps.podbean.com.
Did you know the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, a.k.a. SFPERG, has been leading social and environmental activism on campus for 40 years? SFPERG is student activism, by students, for students. Do you have a vision for a brighter future? Are you passionate about changing the world? Visit us at www.sfperg.ca. That's www.sfpirg.ca to learn more about getting involved today.
Bonne fête, rendez-vous! On est déjà en mars, ce qui veut dire que les célébrations entourant le 25e anniversaire des Rendez-vous de la francophonie sont en cours. Dès maintenant, visitez le rvf.ca pour voir ce que les Rendez-vous vous ont préparé.